Right. So today we are going to be taking a deep dive into a Fourth Amendment case.
Okay.
It's Bubber v. North Carolina. And
interesting.
Yeah. So this is a really, really fascinating case. It involves a man who was convicted of rape and a rifle that was found at his grandmother's house. But there's a twist. The police said they had a warrant to search the house, but it turned out that they didn't. And this whole thing throws us into this really kind of murky area of the law where we have to figure out what consent actually means in the context of police searches.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting about this case to me is that it kind of forces us to think about how we balance effective law enforcement with the need to protect individual rights.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
These are the kinds of issues that the courts are always grappling with. And Bumper is just like a perfect example of that struggle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's lay out the basic facts here. We've got Wayne Bumper. He was convicted of rape and assault, and the prosecution used a rifle, a .22 caliber rifle, as evidence against him. This rifle was found at his grandmother's house. Her name was Mrs. Leith. The police told her that they had a warrant to search, but they didn't. And later on, they claimed that she actually consented to the search.
Mm. And that's where the legal battle really heats up. The Fourth Amendment protects us from unreasonable searches and seizures, which usually means that police officers need a warrant signed by a judge in order to search someone's home.
Right.
Now, there is a really important exception to that rule, and that's consent.
Okay.
So if someone willingly allows the police to conduct a search, then a warrant isn't needed. But in the Bumper case, the question wasn't whether Mrs. Leith, you know, simply said yes to the police. The question was whether her consent was truly voluntary, given the circumstances you see.
I see. So it makes you wonder if the police just have to, like, ask nicely and you say sure. Does that mean they could just search your whole house?
Well, no, not exactly. The Supreme Court in Bumper really focused on whether or not Mrs. Leith's consent was actually voluntary. You know, they ultimately concluded that when the police tell someone that they have a warrant to search a place, it creates a coercive atmosphere, and people may feel as though they have to comply with the police's demands, even if they actually have rights that they could assert.
Oh, wow. So I'm starting to see now why this case is considered such a landmark decision. You know, it wasn't just about whether or not the police actually found the rifle. It was also about the methods they used to find it.
Exactly. The court in this case looked beyond the outcome and really scrutinized the process that the police used. And they made it very clear that the way evidence is obtained is just as important as the evidence itself. If you start admitting evidence that was found illegally, even if it might point to guilt, it really weakens Fourth Amendment protections for everybody.
So basically, because of Bumper, police can't just lie about having a warrant in order to get around our constitutional rights.
Yeah, that's one of the key takeaways here. And, you know, what this ruling did, it gave defense attorneys a really powerful new tool. They can now use this case to challenge evidence that was obtained using these sorts of tactics, thanks to Bumper.
Okay, so we've been talking about the majority opinion and the impact it had. But I'm kind of curious about the dissenting opinions in this case. Were there any dissenting opinions?
Yeah, there were actually a couple of justices who dissented in this case, and they argued that even if the rifle was found improperly, the other evidence against Mr. Bumper was strong enough to justify his conviction.
Yeah.
So they were basically saying that the ends sort of justified the means in this particular case.
Oh, so they thought that the courts should really just focus on whether he was guilty or not, regardless of how the police found the rifle. But the majority really pushed back against that, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They absolutely did. The majority was not willing to compromise when it came to the Fourth Amendment, even if it meant that a guilty person might go free. They firmly believed that allowing illegally obtained evidence would undermine the Fourth Amendment for everyone, regardless of the specific circumstances of a case.
So essentially, the majority opinion was saying that protecting everyone's rights is more important than securing a conviction in any one particular case.
That is a really insightful way to put it. You've hit the nail on the head. You know, Bumper established a precedent that the process by which we obtain evidence really, really matters, and that illegally obtained evidence can never be justified simply because it may lead to a conviction. It was a really important case for prioritizing our constitutional rights, even when it's difficult to do so.
Well, this case was decided back in 1968, and I'm wondering if those principles are still relevant today in the digital age.
Hmm.
You know, in a world where we have digital data and concerns about online privacy, does the Bumper case have anything to say about how the police interact with our phones and computers?
That is a fantastic question. And to be honest, it's one that legal scholars are still trying to figure out. You know, the core principles of Bumper, this idea of voluntary consent and the burden of proof being on the prosecution, those are still very much alive today.
Right.
But applying those principles to the digital realm, that can get very, very tricky. You know, I mean, think about all these tactics that police use today, like these knock and talks.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're trying to, you know, get you to consent to a search without actually having a warrant.
That sounds like exactly what the bumper case was trying to prevent.
Right.
So how does this all play out in the real world?
Well, imagine, you know, you're at home late at night and the police knock on your door and they say they can smell marijuana and they want to come in and take a look around.
Oh, wow.
You know, knowing your rights after bumper could be really, really crucial in a situation like that.
Yeah. So it's kind of like just claiming to have a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can put a lot of pressure on a person and their consent may not be truly voluntary. But what about our digital lives?
Mm.
You know, does clicking agree on a website or an app, does that really count as giving consent in the eyes of the law?
Well, you know, that's a little bit of a gray area, to be honest. And the courts are still trying to figure all of that out. I mean, are our digital footprints essentially like our homes? You know, are they protected spaces that require a warrant to access? Or is clicking, I agree, enough to waive those protections?
Just like we're playing catch up with technology.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a tough question to answer. But I think the core principles that were established in Bumper, this idea of voluntary consent and the burden of proof being on the government, those are still the foundation for how we approach these new digital challenges.
I see. So the dissenting opinions in Bumper,
mm-hmm.
they brought up this idea that the other evidence against Wayne Bumper might have been strong enough for conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Did they go into any more detail about that or explain why they felt so strongly about that point?
Yeah. You know, the dissenters were basically arguing for a more pragmatic approach. They felt that, you know, if the evidence clearly pointed to guilt, then the method of obtaining one specific piece of evidence shouldn't be enough to overturn the whole case.
So they were putting more emphasis on the outcome, you know, making sure that a guilty person was convicted than they were on the process.
Right. It's this classic clash between, you know, legal philosophies. Do the ends justify the means, or is the process itself just as important as the outcome?
Yeah. And the majority really pushed back hard against that idea. They said that allowing this illegally obtained evidence, you know, it sets a dangerous precedent, even if it seems like a small thing in one particular case.
Yeah. And they were really worried about the long-term impact on Fourth Amendment protections. You know, they were looking at the bigger picture.
Okay. So even though this case, you know, Bumper v. North Carolina was decided decades ago, it still has huge implications for how we think about consent and searches today, both in the physical world and in the digital world.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's a cornerstone case in criminal law when it comes to consent searches. It's really shaped our understanding of the Fourth Amendment.
I bet every defense attorney out there has this case memorized.
Oh, I'm sure they do. It's a playbook for challenging questionable police tactics, you know? Bumper really gives defense attorneys a powerful tool to use when they're fighting for their clients' rights, making sure that evidence is obtained legally and fairly.
So what would you say is like the most important lesson that lawyers and law students, you know, should take away from Bumper v. North Carolina?
Well, I think it reminds us that the Fourth Amendment is not just some, you know, abstract legal concept. It has real world consequences. It impacts how the police can interact with us, you know, in our everyday lives.
Right.
And Bumper forces us to really think critically about what consent truly means and to be, you know, vigilant about protecting our rights.
It's been so interesting to really dig into the details of this case.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how a case from 1968 can still be so relevant and thought-provoking today.
You know, it really speaks to the enduring power of the Constitution and how the courts are constantly grappling with how to interpret it, you know, in light of these new challenges and technologies. And Bumper is a perfect example of how a single case can reshape the legal landscape for generations to come.
This whole conversation just makes you think, you know, what does it actually mean to consent to a search? I mean, Bumper seems to be saying that it's a lot more complicated than just saying the word yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why Bumper v. North Carolina is such a landmark case. It reminds us that the Fourth Amendment isn't just, you know, words on a page. It's there to protect us from the government overstepping its bounds, even when it's trying to make it seem like everything's on the up and up.
It sounds like Bumper set a precedent that's still shaping legal strategy today.
Definitely. I mean, this case is fundamental to how we think about consent searches, and the principles that came out of Bumper are always being tested and refined as technology changes, you know?
Right.
Think about it for a second. How do we apply Bumper to situations where the police get consent through deception, but not by, like, specifically claiming to have a warrant?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
There are so many nuances to this issue. It's really fascinating.
So after this deep dive into Bumper v. North Carolina, what's the one thing you really want our listeners to take away from all of this?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think the biggest takeaway from Bumper is that the Constitution is a living document. It's not just a static set of rules, but it's a framework for navigating the relationship between individual rights and government power. And as technology keeps advancing and new challenges pop up, cases like Bumper are going to keep guiding us as we figure out how to protect those rights.
This deep dive has been so insightful. Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
My pleasure. Anytime I get to talk about constitutional law is a good time.
And to all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on this exploration of the Fourth Amendment. Until next time, keep those legal hinds sharp. And remember, knowing your rights is the first step to protecting them.